My favorite thing to do is talk to you. Listening to how your life has been impacted and how you have grown in your organizational journey is so inspiring. Over the years, I have really internalized for myself and verbalized to you that perfect is not a thing. It does not exist. I have replaced the word perfect in my vocabulary with the word excellent. I am not a perfectionist. I am a person of excellence. I invite you to come to share your story about how you are being transformed from a reactive to a proactive person, from an overwhelmed homeowner to one who is now in more control of your time and your spaces. We all want to hear what more grace feels like in your life with your unique circumstances. Do not wait until you are a perfectly organized person. Remember, perfect does not exist. I want to hear from you. Please sign up to join me for a Wednesday podcast interview at organize365.com/Wednesday. Laura, thanks so much for coming to the Organize 365 podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
How did you first find Organize 365?
I can't remember how I found you. I think you found me. I was furloughed in March of 2020. And so I just listened to a lot of podcasts. And sometime early 2021, I just came across you and I just fell in the deep end. So I got your book, Paper Solution, I guess, at that point. And DIY'd a Sunday basket and some binders and all the things. And I knew that this was going to stick. So
awesome. Okay. So was there anyone in your household with you in March when you were quarantining?
Oh, yes. All of them. My husband, Rob, we've been married 29 years. My daughter, Samantha, had moved home from the dorms here in town. So she was here. And my older daughter was in and out quite a bit. And her boyfriend. And so, yeah, lots of folks in and out all around.
And are they all off on their own now? Or are they, some of them still at home?
Yeah. Older daughter, Sydney, she's 25, just got married last weekend. And so we had a big time. Yeah. So that's good. And so she's still here in town. So we are close. We see each other often. And then younger daughter, Samantha, she's 22. She will graduate from Memphis in December. And so she is in this semester, but she will move back out in December to her apartment.
Wow. So, yeah. From everyone to no one, right?
I know, right? I keep saying empty nest. And my husband's like, it's never an empty nest.
Not yet. Yeah. No, not there yet. So, okay. So you're listening to podcasts in 2020. You find Organize 365 in 2021. What interested you in Organize 365 and why did you decide to start getting organized?
So I think I've always been propensity to be organized. I've always had my you know, planners and all the things. And it just, I'm very organized at work. We do binders. We plan trips. I work at a large church. And so, I mean, there's a binder for everything. And it was like, oh, a binder at home. What a concept. So, yeah, so it was great. We homeschooled high school, my younger daughter, just for high school, and loved planning for that, loved all the things that came with that. And so yeah, it just made sense to apply it in a different way. All those organizing tricks that we do in all the places when people are watching us, but here at home, it just made sense to do it here too.
And had you tried any other organizing systems or other ways to get organized before you found Organize 365?
I did like Fly Lady for a while and did that. I think when I went back to work, so I had been working part-time for 10 years. And right when I went back to work was this a little bit after that, we started homeschooling. And then that same year I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Just all those for a couple of years there, I don't think we were underwater, but we were just day to day doing
this close.
Exactly. Treading day to day. And so just keeping up with homeschool and then all of the medical things, all the papers just go on file, like just keep the papers, going to the specialist, all the different things, the medications. Mm-hmm. And so everything just goes in a big file and then it's sort of useless. So finding and learning how to whittle down what's most important, all that paperwork, what to keep, what not to keep, was so helpful.
And when you have a medical diagnosis like that, it is always a brand new field for the person who is being diagnosed, not for the person that's treating you, obviously, but it's, I mean, you start to look at everything in your life, right? Like
right.
what you're eating, medications, doctor's appointments, just everything. You just start to look at everything and researching and trying to figure it out. And do you want to try things that are alternative? And then meeting people who also have that condition that you didn't know before. And right. It really is, I think a lot of times when you go to organize your paperwork for things like that, it's also processing through this new thing that's coming into your life that you did not ask for, but yeah, is not optional right. not to accept it now. And exactly. then how are you going to process that and be proactive in that? Like, what was that like? Like everyone, I always say you are going to settle somebody's estate. Like you are going to do it. You just, it's going to be a surprise when you find out it's you. and someone in your immediate circle is going to get some kind of a diagnosis that's significant.
Right.
So what was that like?
So in addition to my own medical binder, so my mom and dad live here in town with us, and I'm the youngest of four children. So that is my role too, to get to do. And so I do have a binder for both of them. I go to all my mom's appointments with her, but I think just, you know, learning, reading, and just compiling all of that information. I mean, all the books I got about MS, all the websites, all the diets, and MS is really tricky because everyone has their own, the way you exhibit all the things. And so comparing yourself to others, but yeah, you can't, and figuring out the different medications do different things and how in the long run, because it's not like I take medication and I feel better today. It's always about in 10 years, how much progressed is it going to get, which who knows, you know, and so just trying to make the best decisions for later even. So that's, yeah. So then just having that all together and being able to access what you need when you need it is so important.
You know, I think often when we talk about organizing medical records or having a medical binder, I will often talk about, you know, you need to write down your health history because every new doctor is going to want to know that, your medications, when you had vaccinations, even way back to your childhood, they're going to ask about those. They will literally ask you what age you were when you walked, like when you're 90, like, because it just shows so many developmental things from your childhood. Right. And those are all important for you to find, and you need to find out the answers to those. But as you're talking about MS specifically, I think back to when my kids were diagnosed with different things that didn't really have medical protocols. And so I had to like go rogue, which I did, and go into forums and get books and try special diets and things like that. Right. And so when I think about the medical binders I have for my kids, and there's still information in those medical binders, it's the research that I did for me to understand the diagnosis that was given. And I'll never know as much as the doctors do in that field. But also, I mean, do you realize that the amount that we know in the medical community is like doubling every couple of months? Like it's insanity. No doctor can know it all either.
Right.
And I have so many notes and I still have them in the basement. Like, ask me what a supplement does. I could tell you everything each supplement does in this. I have this 2-inch binder of just supplements in alphabetical order and how they can be, I mean, they're food. So like how they could support you and when not to combine them. And so you need that information too. It's not just what you share with the doctor. It's what you need for your own medical.
Right. Right, for sure. He told me I had my first symptoms in 2009. So I wasn't actually diagnosed until 2014 when I went on a medication. And so in 2009, he said, you know, in 10 years, MS will probably be 10 different things. Like it won't be what we think it is now. And sure enough, I mean, the medication I went on 5 years later wasn't even there in 2009. So keeping up with that. And honestly, for me, it's like all that, a lot of written research that I have from back then, it can just go away because it's irrelevant. So that's helpful to know what can go out the door.
Yeah, but I think it is helpful to talk about that your medical binder is as much for you to be able to record your symptoms and help your doctor to help you, but also for your doctor to help you and for you to help your doctor as these diseases are becoming more refined in their diagnosis and in their treatment. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think about ADHD, and there are many, many, many different kinds of treatments for ADHD, stimulant, non-stimulant, long-acting, short-acting, et cetera, et cetera. And we've gone through a lot of those with our kids. And we found that with one of these medications, the prescription, the name brand worked, but the generic did not work, which it should, because it's the same medication, but it's not. So then you have to fight with the insurance company about why this worked and why this didn't work. I think as we get 20, 30 years out and we're able to do DNA testing and medication matching, we're going to find out why certain medications worked for certain populations and not for others. And that really is a detective work for you, like especially if you're diagnosed with anything mood related, anxiety or depression, like there are so many choices and it's just going to depend on your chemistry. If you are diagnosed with anything neurological or mood-based, and you know a family member that has that same diagnosis or one that is close, and they have a medication that works for them, I highly suggest you tell your doctor which one that is, because that will probably work with your chemistry as well. But especially if you're doing, you know, for depression, I mean, you sometimes you have to go through quite a few of those before you find the one that's really going to work for you.
Right, right. And the different dosage amounts. I was at the cardiologist with my mom recently, and she was taking a certain dose, but then they changed it and her blood pressure got out of whack. And it was just like, how about, you know, maybe could we try this again? And, you know, and sure enough, she's just leveled off and it's perfect. So it's keeping up with that. Yeah. I had my little binder and all my little things when I walked in there, and I showed him, and he said, well, I can't access that right now. And I was like, oh, that's okay. I have it right here.
So. Exactly. And it, the more the doctors realize and the medical community realize that you are advocating and researching for understanding, not for blaming or trying to orchestrate your own medical care without the help of a doctor, they let their guard down and they're like, oh, we can talk like peers. Okay, well, then these are the two things I'm thinking about. And I'd be like, okay, I researched both those two, and I think this one over this one. They're like, oh, we like that. We'll go with that. Nice. And once they realize that you're doing research for advocacy in a supportive and collaborative way,
right?
Once I established that relationship with my doctors, I would call them and I'd say, okay, we're 2 weeks in, this is what we're seeing. And they would change medications over the phone versus another appointment. Or they would say, here's what we're going to do. And if this is successful in 2 weeks, go ahead and titrate up to the next dose before you see me, versus having to go in for every single doctor's appointment, because they trusted that I was looking for the same side effects they were looking for, and that I would notice if the trial was going south. I wasn't just blindly giving medications. It is a partnership. Like
right.
These binders are, you're in this, like you're in this event, and you're actively in it. You're not passively in it.
Right. Right. Yeah. My neurologist, he says, okay, what questions do you have? Cause I'm sitting there with my book open and he knows mm-hmm. I'm going to hit all the things. And yeah, I feel like he appreciates that, or he responds to me where he knows that we're, but I've got it all listed out. And this is who I saw. This is what we're taking. This is, yeah.
Yep. Well, and that's exciting for them. Cause I mean, they're in this field because they want to see success and they want to support you. And if you are taking active participation in that as well, then the medical community is like, oh, great. We can have a deeper conversation. We can jump down to this next level. And they learn as much from you too, like, because you are proactively taking it. And when you have a diagnosis like MS, like, your neurologist and you are going to be friends for a long time. And so it's worth it to invest in a mutually beneficial relationship.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think.
Yeah, very much so. Very much.
And I also would think from a doctor's perspective, if you come in without a lot of information and they have to ask the questions and they're kind of like almost guessing and hoping they ask the right questions, because you're not coming in with as much information, as a doctor, I would love the more information that my patient is able to give me so I can give a more informed answer with more confidence.
Right. But also, one doctor early on said to me, and I switched neurologists way early on, and I can't remember which one said it to me, but, oh, please, he said something about, did you Google that? Like, don't freak out if you Google it. And I was like, not freaking out, but I do have questions, you know?
Right, right.
So I'm sure that they get people who are just seeing all the things and overwhelmed. But yeah, but I said, no, but I have questions.
It is a delicate balance. But yeah, I mean, I think that we're allowed to be active participants in all of our lives. There's no area of your life that is happening to you mm-hmm. that you do not have permission to understand what is going on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So your organized 365 journey. So you ended up on the podcast in 2021. And what did you decide to do first?
Well, I DIY'd a few things, but then I realized I want to share this. I need my daughters, my friends, my military, my friends' military kids, you know, just all the things were just like, oh my goodness, so many people need to know this. So of course I bought all the things. And so by June or so of 21, I knew I wanted to be a Sunday Basket certified organizer. And then when you offered it to the whole paper solution, absolutely, I'm in. I knew that after the wedding, I would be mm-hmm. ready to really mm-hmm. get grooving on that. So, and I am, I'm ready to get moving on.
Wow.
That.
So that's pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a year and a half now, but yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty quick. So what do you hope to do with your certification?
Well, I've started a business and mm-hmm. I've had several clients, not lots and lots, but I'm ready to go forward that direction. And I'm enjoying it going. I've done a little bit of in-home organizing. I've done some paper organizing where I've brought a friend whose parent passed. And so I brought all their papers into my home and just took care of that for her, helped her just get it where she could even, you know, comprehend what was going on. And I think that's the first time I realized I hate that this happened, but I am enjoying what I'm doing. Like, I think I'm really good at this.
Yeah.
So that was the moment where I realized, okay, I think this might be kind of a niche for me. So,
yeah.
So I've enjoyed that. Got to come to Phoenix and meet you there. Got to do that paper organization retreat there, which was so fun and learned so much and definitely am drawn to that.
Yeah. And I would think with your background at the church, like it'd be really fun to do a paper organizing retreat at the church. I don't know, like some churches don't let you do things like that, but other ones do. And it's got a lot of congregation members that need a lot of help with their paper.
I have actually, one of my clients has been a homeschool family and I'm like, okay, let's get this room to where you can think and it can work for you. So that was a lot of fun to do that. I hope to do more of that.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun for the whole community. What part of the country do you live in?
I'm in Memphis.
Okay, Memphis, Tennessee, right?
Right, right.
Then there's more than one Memphis. There might be, I don't know.
I don't know, maybe.
What's a story that you want to share about your organizing journey?
Well, I have a funny story from the wedding. My nephew, who's in his 30s, saw my portable Sunday basket and it had my binder in it. I don't even know if I pulled that out the whole weekend of the wedding necessarily, maybe once or twice, but he called it the bag with the nuclear codes.
Where's the football?
I know. I was like, for this weekend, it's about that important for me.
Oh my goodness. I love that. I think we can all use that.
I know,
we
right?
should like the head of household should have the bag with the nuclear codes in it. Like, who's got the football? That's good.
Exactly. that moved around from room to room at the venue. And I was just like, where's my bag? Where's my bag? Where's my Sunday basket? And everyone knew what I was talking about.
Oh my, which portable Sunday basket did you use for the?
Oh, it's the black and white one.
Oh, nice. What were the colors of the wedding?
Burgundy and gray.
Oh, beautiful.
It was very pretty. Yeah, it was nice.
Very fun. And now you could just save that football for the next wedding.
Oh, well, I mean, I took that binder out and I put my mom's medical binder in it, went to the doctor the next day. So yeah, no,
it's totally
it's doing its job, being portable and carrying all the things.
I mean, and that's exactly why I created it. Because when my kids would have a bazillion million doctor's appointments, I would bring whatever slash pockets I could work on and a binder because you're sitting there for so long. Mm-hmm. There's so much sitting time and I had so much mm-hmm. paperwork to do. I would mm-hmm. carry it around. So that portable Sunday basket is meant to hold a binder on one side and slash pockets on the other so they don't get crumpled right. and you could throw stuff in there. So, wow, Laura, you're really putting that thing to work.
And inevitably I get in every doctor's office and my phone, I have no cell service. And so if I didn't have those labs printed out and if I didn't have the most current things, I would be like, well, I think last time maybe, you know, and they're not going to respond to that. So
yeah. Do you have a workbox story you want to share?
Well, I do use the workbox concept at my part-time job at home. And my desk drawer, it is laid out just like a workbox. And so being at a church and everything is just like an annual cycle. You know, we do the same things and seeing them coming up and getting ready for them. And it's just helped me prepare for the next event in my mind for the details that I need to do. Yeah, I'm not out there doing the program, but I'm keeping up with all the volunteers and all the, you know, all the things, all the little details that are kind of behind the scenes. So it's great. Nice. I love that concept. Has really helped with my workflow, with my job description. So
yeah. Understanding the amount of invisible work. I mean, I know you're doing a lot of invisible work there that doesn't mean that your employer or your team is going to understand or recognize it, but at least you realize where all of your time is going.
Exactly. Well, and I do get moments when I'm like, oh, they know what I'm doing. They see this. They see how this is going down, getting all the details and all the just keeping up with the records and the attendance and the just all those all paperwork and the medical forms and the, you know, all the things that are necessary, but no one thinks about it until we need it and it needs to be done and accessible. And so that's my goal, is to be able to say, here you go. It's right here.
Oh my gosh. What do you think you have more of now?
Probably peace, energy. Everyone says time, and that's true. But for me, with MS and being like fatigue on a whole different level, I know when my best hours of the day are. And so now I know better how to plan for my morning. Usually afternoon, I hit a good slump. If I can make it through the afternoon without falling over, then boy, I'm ready for my bath and go to bed at 7 o'clock. So knowing how to plan my energy, really. I mean, it's planning my time, but it's planning my energy. So yeah, that's.
So that's, how did you do that with planning for the wedding and going back to work? Like, what are, I mean, I know there are a lot of people who watch me and they're like, Lisa has a ridiculous amount of energy. And I do think that, like, when you watch me on Instagram, I'm like, oh yeah, that's true. Like, even Greg's like, I don't know how you, I'm either awake or asleep. Those are the options. And when I'm awake, I'm doing something. Even watching TV, I'm doing something. And I could see that being very demoralizing for people who do not have that kind of energy. So how did you plan a wedding and do the other things in your life? Like, what were some of the things you learned?
I think I've learned from you planning procrastination. And if I know I need to get a thing done, then I will do that tomorrow morning. I don't have energy to give that proper thought in the evening. I went to bed last night about 8:30, and this morning I was wide awake at 4. So I was like, all right, hit it. And so I jumped into work and reading and getting ready to talk to you and all the things. And by about 6:30, I'm like, I just need 30 minutes before 30 minute nap before I get a shower. But that's when I know when I'm most awake. So I plan to do the things that I need to get done when I have that energy, when I know I'm going to have that energy.
And I will say, I mean, when we had the 2020 shutdown, Greg and I found that we were sleeping more. We were also working more, but we were also sleeping more. And then there was a period, like maybe early 2021, where I felt like I was back to my regular amount of sleep and awake time. But the last 6 months, like, I've been like in bed for 9 hours, and my little ring tells me I've been sleeping 8 of those. Like, I need so much more sleep. And now I go to bed between like 8:30 and 9. It's ridiculous. But Greg is the same way. And it's not because of the time change. We've been this way for months.
I think a lot of times I'm up later than that. Of course, my girls kind of get their burst of energy in the evening and late at night. And so I try to be there for them. And it's sometimes a little hard. I'm like, I'm listening, I promise. But yeah, during COVID and when I was home, I was outside more, I was walking more, I was doing more. That's when I listened to all my podcasts. And I'm not doing that as much now. I'm not sure I'm sleeping more now. I think as I get older, I'm sleeping less, which is sad. But
Yeah, but I do the same thing. If I'm up early, I'm like, okay, I'm up. Greg's like, what'd you do this? 8 o'clock. What'd you do this morning? Oh, I've already done 2 loads of laundry, the dishes. Da-da-da-da. He's like, oh my gosh. I'm like, yeah. Well, I mean, if I'm awake, you might as well just like might get going with the day.
If I'm laying there more than 30 minutes, then I'm just getting up. I'm just going to get up.
Yeah. And I think we're too concerned about what other people are doing in other houses. They have no idea what you're doing. Just do whatever works for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
No.
Is there anything that you wish you knew sooner?
I think just having everything at my fingertips. I remember going through the files and getting rid of all the papers that you bring home from the doctor's office. Just you don't need all that. Having what you need in a binder, ready to pick up, walk out the door, but just knowing who all my specialists are, knowing who all my mom's specialists are, having a list. Oh, so many times I've just handed my iPad to the triage when we go to her doctor's appointment because of all the medicines. And I'm like, here's what she takes. And they're just like, oh, thank you. And so just having those in one spot and not having to hunt for them every time has been, I mean, I couldn't do that. I can't keep that many things in my head at a time. Putting a card in the Sunday basket, just writing things down at the end of the day. I do sleep better if I've just get it all out of my head. Don't keep running around things in my head. Yeah. Having it all just current and in one spot. I can't put on that. Yeah.
And what advice would you give to someone who is just starting out on their organized 365 journey?
Just carve out the time to do Sunday afternoon or whatever day works best for you. Sometimes Saturday morning is my better planning day. Sunday evening is a good time for us to have dinner with my folks. I mean, so, you know, you just got to figure out what's the best time, but just carve out some time and sit with your week. I mean, just think about what's coming up. Think about what you're going to wear. Think about what you're going to eat. I'm not perfect at that at all, but my week goes better when I have thought through and I don't go to the grocery store every other day. If I've thought it through, got what I needed, just do it. Just carve out that time as hard as it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Laura, thank you so much for coming on the Organized 365 podcast.
I appreciate it. I've enjoyed it, Lisa.